We are diverse, independent, and yours. CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Manu Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby Mountain, and streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Our treat for you today is the artistic director Gordon Gerard, the soloist Marion Newman, and director Anne Hodges of the contemporary opera Song from the Uproar are our guests today. So I would let each of you introduce yourself and tell us, why are you so passionate about this play?
Well, my name is Gordon. I'm the artistic director of City Opera Vancouver. It's a job that I started just a few months ago in September. And this piece, Song from the Uproar, which is an opera, one-act opera, is sort of our first real outing as a company since I took over. So I'm very excited to lead the company in somewhat of a new direction in terms of programming. I'm excited about the team we've assembled and to tell this story about a pretty remarkable character. So I'm excited for people to learn about her and to hear this amazing music.
Yes, it's great that the play is going to start right at the beginning of Women's Month, so it'll increase people's consciousness about her.
Oh, that's great. Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm Marion Newman. I'm a mezzo-soprano, and I'm singing the role of Isabel Eberhardt, who is the person that this is about. And Isabel was this cool explorer. She only lived to 27, but lived a life that, you know, she crammed so much in. She could have been 88, honestly. So I'm really excited to play this role of somebody who was a strong feminist, who was against colonization in Algeria. She was a world traveler. She spoke 5 languages. She's just much smarter than me, obviously, and was just really cool. So it's wonderful to get to perform any new opera that sounds so gorgeous and is about somebody that I'm excited to learn about as well.
I'm excited to learn about it through the play, through the opera.
I'm Anne, and I'm the stage director, and I'm just thrilled to be working with both Marion and Gordon. We've worked together in other capacities or on other projects in the past, and so when Gordon offered me the opportunity to direct this opera, I just leapt at it, because as Marion has said, it's such an incredible story or character that we're exploring. The music is phenomenal, and the collaboration with these artists has been very satisfying and exciting so far.
Well, it sounds exciting. One of the questions that I ask people is, first of all, tell us a little bit more about your project. We're going to be airing a week before it starts. So tell us about where, when, and how people will be able to see it.
So this opera, it's a one-act opera. It's just over an hour long. It will play at the York Theatre, which is just off Commercial Drive in Vancouver. And it runs February 29th. At 7:30 p.m., March 2nd at 7:30 p.m., and March 3rd at 2 p.m. And there'll be a talk back after each performance to talk to Marion, to talk to me, to talk to Anne, ask the questions. And I think it'll be really cool for people to experience this unique offering.
I think it'll be a cool way for people to experience the start of Women's History Month.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting, I didn't know who Isabel Eberhardt was before I stumbled on this opera. And so to learn about this extraordinary woman, I now want everybody to know about her. So it is great that it happens at the beginning of Women's History Month. I think this is a woman who probably we should know more about, or more people should know about her, I should say.
Now, the significance of a one-act opera, how do you get so much history into one act?
Well, one thing that the opera does is instead of trying to cram her life into one act, as you say, that would be almost impossible because she lived so much, she probably has enough material for three or four operas. So instead of trying to sort of tell the story of Isabel's life in a chronological way, the composer and librettist are looking at one moment in her life, which is the moment she died in a flash flood in the middle of the desert or in Algeria. And so they're sort of looking at the moment from the time that you pass from life to death. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, there are all these fragments and memories and re-experiences of parts of her life that she sort of relives. So we're not being asked to sort of condense the entire history of her life in this short opera, but instead we see sort of, it's the subtitle of the opera is The Lives and Deaths of Isabel Eberhardt. So it's like we see this fragment of her as a lover, we see this fragment of her as a reveler, we see this fragment of her as an explorer. So it's sort of like little tastes of her life as she's making that final stage in her journey, which is passing from life to death.
Now, in writing and developing that, how did you get and gather the research? What are some of your sources?
Oh, it's actually a piece that's composed by a composer named Missy Mazzoli, who is an alive and well composer from New York, and a librettist who wrote all the words, or who put the words together, I should say, named Royce Vavrick, and he is Canadian. And so they teamed up to make the piece. And through their research, I don't know what their process was of researching, but they came across this amazing character and decided to write an opera. And actually, Isabel wrote her whole life. And she wrote all this beautiful poetry. She wrote a journal about her travels and her experiences, her adventures, her heartbreaks. And so it is, the whole thing is made up of her words, actually. They just arranged them in a way that tells the story.
Very unique storytelling. It also, one of the most common ways people talk about death is at this flashback. So you're actually bringing to life a flashback.
Yeah, that sort of was the way in for me to understand the opera, because it is these sort of fragments that are not necessarily connected in a chronological way. But once I realized that we could sort of look at the first scene and then the final concluding scene as to the two bookends, and then within those bookends it is like that sort of classic idea of in the moment before you pass, the fragments of your life flash in front of you. So, and the way that we look at it too, because there's also a five-person chorus in this opera too, so it's like they are parts of Isabel that are sort of guiding her through these different fragments of her life to help her take what she needs to take with her into the next stage of her existence. So she sort of needs to learn or remember or let go of something in each fragment before she can continue on.
Now, I think, there's sometimes people who say, oh, I don't like opera, because they just have one picture in their mind of what it's like. Can you tell us a little bit of the things of the structure of an opera when you said that there are these beings that gather along? Can you share with anyone who may not know what's the basic structure, and then what's the difference with contemporary?
Yeah, those are great questions. And actually, because I work in, we all work in opera a lot, this is a conversation that I think most of us are used to having, because people who maybe not necessarily have experienced opera have these notions of what it is. You see snippets of opera in a movie, and it's a sort of a particular caricature of what opera can be. This is very different. This is a chamber opera, which means it's very small. So it's in a small theater. So we're not talking about, 2,500 seats. Every seat, you sit close enough that you can actually see the facial expressions of the people on stage. Also, this opera is in English, and a lot of operas that we perform are in French or Italian or German, which adds an extra layer for some folks that make it a little less easy to get into. But this is in English, and it's really a very small, I would say an intimate creation of a big world, is how I would put it. There's so many big things that happen in it, but it's a very small space, and you have no choice but really to participate in it when you're sitting in the audience, which is a very different experience than if you go and see La Boheme, and the classic example of Aida, where there's elephants and camels on stage. It's not that. It's very different, and it's very accessible.
Right. And I had the experience of seeing Aida in Rome.
Oh, wow.
With all the animals, you know. Right.
Yeah. This is not that.
One of the classic things that is in this, though, is that the orchestra is in a pit below the stage, and the conductor is standing where he can see, Gordon here, is standing where he can see what's going on the stage and can cue everybody below and above and kind of keep us all connected with each other. And on the stage, we have these scrims that present a place for media to be projected onto those scrims, which is being developed by some amazing media artists who live here in Toronto. Armina, where are we? Vancouver. I live in Toronto. I forget where I am sometimes. But that they, through that artwork that they've created, they have given us a track to create the worlds that Isabel is going through.
Right. So really, the audience will be going on a journey.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And because Isabel was also an incredible poet, the words, because they're in English and they're like understandable, there's that experience of sort of processing the words as they're being said as well, and interpreting that as, you know, as she's traveling through the different vignettes as well. There's also a contemporary sound too in the orchestra. Maybe Gord, do you want to explain?
Yeah, right? Actually, this is a really different sound world that's been created by the composers and will be recreating when we get to the theater. You know, in traditional operas, it's usually a huge orchestra of can be 60, 80 players that's hidden underneath the stage, lots of brass instruments and string instruments. This is quite unique. There's only five players. So there's a flute player, a clarinet player, there's a pianist, there's a double bass player, and there's an electric guitar player, which is not something you normally expect to hear in an opera. Super cool. And then sort of on top or in around all of that, there's a pre-recorded electro sort of acoustic soundscape that has been created that we weave the instruments through and on and into and around. You know, one example that's really striking is one of the stories we tell about Isabel is her journey to North Africa on a boat. And so there are these recorded sounds of the ship and the waves, and we hear the birds and there's the ship's bell, and all of those things are integrated with the sort of what I would call normal instruments. So it creates a world that is unique from a sound perspective too.
It's very haunting and evocative too. And it really suits the what we've sort of described as her passing from life to death. Like after every vignette, we frequently go back to this sort of evocative, almost ghostly sound that then pushes her into her next memory. It's really, I find it very powerful.
Yeah, and those who are big opera fans, so there's a divide of people who love new opera or contemporary music and people who are not there yet. So I would say that it's important to note that this music is very accessible. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's there are lots of melodies. I cannot stop humming them, walking down the street, in the shower, or making breakfast. Like these beautiful melodies are running through my head all the time. And so people will leave the theater with something to hum. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that far into the spiky new music kind of range. And it borrows a tiny bit from jazz, I would say. That electric guitar reminds me a little bit of rock ballads. But all with this beautiful, very Missy Mazzoli musical language that is, it's almost like a spa for your ears.
Oh, a spa for your ears. I like that.
Dramatic. But it's also just lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny because I often refer to it like a warm bath of sound. Yeah. Like it's like a warm bath of sound at times. And then Marion has the most beautiful, warm voice that, I mean, I heard it live the other day for the first time. I guess because I've never heard you live before. Like we've worked together. We're always talking, but yeah, we have worked together, but I've never heard her sing in the same room before. And I felt myself get all teary eyed because it's just such a beautiful, warm, beautiful sound. So we're very lucky to be working with Marion.
Thank you, Anne.
I've had conversations with people about nature and also about how sound affects brain waves. And how, when you talked about you might find yourself humming it on the way home or in the shower, that's mm-hmm. one of the things that says how it's like medicine. It can be healing. So you can have this wonderful experience that days after you're still either harking back to from the visuals you've seen or from the music that you've heard.
Yeah. And I want to echo what Gord said earlier, too, of like the difference between sitting in a like the, you know, grand opera has its place. Of course, we all love it. But being in that close to these incredible voices. So Marion, plus the five singers who were playing the chorus as well, all of them have astounding voices. And being that close, like there is something with the sound waves, I feel, that is an experience you can't get just by listening to the opera on a CD or CD, so old fashioned. Yeah. I'm in a streaming service. Shows my age. but yeah, it's a very visceral experience, I find, that the audience would. For me, the most incredible operatic experiences as an audience has been in the smaller venues when I'm so close and I'm feeling like I can almost feel the sound waves hitting my chest. And like Gordon says, the being able to see into their eyes, and it's really quite something.
I also love the way music gives you an emotional language. So there's parts of your body that are hearing that story and taking it in that are probably not even conscious for us, but it just, we are like, if you watch a television show with absolutely no music, you are just watching people talk and it might not hit you the same way. But as soon as that music swells, it can make you emotional. And opera is like that. It's the whole thing is delivered with so much emotion.
It's like an early preview to spring. We don't have to wait until the end when they say it's the first day of spring. You can have that spring into your heart as you go to and listen to this opera.
I love that.
Absolutely.
Could each of you share a bit of, since there's such a long history and not many people are familiar, maybe one piece of something from her history that people would be interested in knowing?
So much. Yeah.
Wow, it's like, where to start?
Yeah.
I mean, I think what's, even though the opera is not a chronological story of her life at all, I think looking at where she came from and where she went, as a consequence of that is astounding. So she was born in Switzerland to a sort of unusual family setup. Her mother had escaped from her husband and ran away with the family tutor. And so there were unconventional aspects of her life from the beginning. But I think through her childhood and in her teens, I guess, several events really hit her hard, including the death of close family members, her brother, her father. And then that led, and that and other things led to her basically renouncing European society. She converted to Islam. And at the age of 20, she moved to Algeria, which I think is astounding for anyone at any time. But to think that this happened in, I don't know, 1910 or something like this, when women were even more restricted in terms of how they could come and go in society, I just think what a remarkable and brave person she must have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she also dressed in men's wear so that she could present as a man as much as she could. And I don't know if she was convincing, but fact that she was wearing those men's clothes just gave her access to places. She just took that space.
Yeah.
And that was so unusual for a woman at that time who would probably have had to have had a, what do you call?
An escort.
Yeah.
At all times. Yeah. And that's something she learned from childhood. Her tutor actually encouraged her to go out into the streets of Geneva and see things on her own, but said, dress as a boy so that people will treat you with more respect.
Yeah.
And so she took that lesson with her right through her whole life.
She apparently, like, she wore the clothes of a man for, like, to be able to be free and travel as she wanted, also, though she was acknowledged as a woman. So it's like it was this very sort of interesting sort of existence that she had. She apparently took many lovers, but she married an Algerian soldier. And what else do we know about her? There's speculation that she might have, she was a sort of a precursor of anti-colonialism or decolonizing, or just she was not a fan of what was going on with the French colonization of Algeria, North Africa at that time, and spoke out and wrote about it a lot. But then there's also speculations that at times possibly she was doing work for the French. Like there's all sorts of just different sort of stories about her. Her travel writing is phenomenal. I was saying to Marion the other day that, like, I began working through some of her work, and we're so used to reading travel blogs nowadays. But of course, everyone who's writing a travel blog now has access to email and internet, and they're quite safe wherever they go in the world because we have that sort of internet access. And she was all by herself, writing these incredible accounts of the country that she was exploring and visiting, and very respectful. And I just find really intriguing accounts and a kind of writing that I think we don't see anymore. And also speaking about a world that is so long gone. So,
yeah, I would say she went to places not assuming that she was going to take charge there, but to learn about what that place was and to become a part of it in a more natural way, not assuming that her way was better.
Thank you.
Yes, as we're welcoming new people who might have just tuned in, we want you to know that today we are talking with Gordon Gerard, the director, the soloist Marion Newman, and director Anne Hodges of the contemporary opera Song from the Uproar that is starting on, tell us again the date that it's
February 29th, March 2nd, and March 3rd.
And the location?
At the York Theater.
And where could people go? Is there a website for people?
Yeah. The best thing to do is to visit our website, which is cityoperavancouver.com. And there's more information there about the show and how to get tickets and showtimes and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. This show that you are listening to is the Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, Saluwa Show. I'm Charlotte Farrell, host of the show, and welcoming you to hearing about something that's going to be a fantastic way to start your Women's History Month. Would you, Marion, share again the name of this fantastic woman that the opera is about?
Isabel Eberhardt, an explorer, a lover,
a writer,
a beautiful poet. A reveler, as Anne said earlier. She really loved to party. Just a feeler of the biggest feelings.
And which, you know, is an answer to some people are told, oh, you're doing too much, or you have to stick with just one vein. And obviously she had both spiritual, political, artistic, so many veins that she fed.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There's a quote, and I'm going to misquote it because I don't have it right in front of me, but I remember her saying, when I enter into new lands, I feel like I'm entering my life. Mm-hmm. Or when I enter into unknown lands, it might be that I feel like I'm entering my life. So she just had an adventure and a curiosity about everything, whether that's geographic or internal searches or what she's, you know, who she's meeting and everything. She was just always interested in what is new because that is what is filling her life.
I wonder, there's a series that I've done or doing where I ask artists, authors, et cetera, about three P's and two C's. The first is asking each of you, what do you see as your purpose in life?
Oh, that's
whoa.
A good one.
Who would like to
I feel like, you know, I've been working as a musician in some way professionally for, I don't know, 25 years or so now. First as a piano player and now more as a conductor. One of the things that keeps me going is seeing what music in its different forms does for people.